Welcome to the Time Machine. Experience the cancer journey through the eyes of the traveler. Welcome back to the Time Machine. Today's guest is Pastor Paul Jones, and our journey today is a powerful one. It's a challenging one. It's a moving story of the cancer journey through the eyes of the caregiver. Well, Pastor Paul Jones, thank you for stepping into the Time Machine. It's a pleasure to have you. And I was talking to my wife before you arrived and trying to figure out how long we know each other. And she said, wow. She said 3 decades. I said, actually 5. I said,
yeah, that's 50 years.
I said, well, no, I said, if
parts of each decade.
The 80s, now we're in the 20s.
A long time.
And so probably 40 years. I remember.
Yeah.
My first memory of you, of course, I had memories of your dad and preaching and being at church. And then my first of you was as youth pastor, and then me sneaking in as the younger Corcoran with the elders. And I wasn't quite old enough, but I snuck into some
youth event.
Yeah. And so that was the beginning. So quite a lot of history and a lot of different points of connection. But the point of connection today will be, we've both been on the cancer journey or on the cancer journey. And that's something we started 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, my wife and I. And so it's a pleasure to have you. And I know that I believe your journey started, was in 2012?
2013, our journey started. So my journey with cancer is as a spouse and a caretaker. And my wife, Tammy, 2013, we've been married 19 years, and we got 2 grown kids at that stage, and we're empty nesters, and Tammy is just my partner in ministry and everything that we do, and so we were just truly, you know, just one of those couples that just interlocked just across the board, spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally. And so with lives like that, she's at the church with me a lot, and we're doing a lot together. And our journey has a very abrupt beginning. There's no clues. There's no signs. She's not feeling poorly. Whenever she's had her last doctor's checkup, nothing. And she's going out of the house on a Thursday morning to lead women's Bible study. And I'm still at the house. I'm doing something. And I just hear this crash, boom. And I run out, and she has fallen. She's missed the step. And it's about 3 steps from our house into our garage. And she's on the floor, hands and knees. I'm like, honey, are you okay? And she's laughing already. She goes, nothing's hurt but my pride. And she's gathering up all the things that go in her purse. And I said, are you sure you're okay? And she's like, yeah. She laughs about it. And she goes, I got to go. I'm late. And off she goes. She jumps in the car, and she's gone. And we don't give that another thought. That's a Thursday. Friday, everything's normal on Friday. Saturday, everything's normal on Saturday. She does a bunch of shopping with my sisters. They're all in town. So Sunday mornings, I get up a little earlier because I preach all 3 services at Emmanuel. She just comes to the last service. And so a lot of times, she's got people that she's ministering to. I'm preaching. I'm talking to people. We're both at the same church, but I see her when I get home, you know, kind of deal. So so that was what this Sunday was going to be. And so I get home, but I get home before her, which is a little strange because I'm usually one of the last ones to get done there. So I get done before her, and I'm thinking, she's talking to somebody, you know, pastor's wife. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, she pulls in, and so I was kind of waiting for her, and I open the garage door, and she's walking like, remember Tim Conway and Carol Burnett? Maybe you're not old enough. A little old lady, and I'm like, what is up? And she said, I can't walk. She said, I'm like, that's kind of weird. And so I'm like you and me, we share commonalities of athletics and injuries. And so I'm an old athlete and I'm like, okay, let's get some ice and some ibuprofen. And I said, what have you? And so we trace it back to the fall on Thursday. And so I'm like, so I mean, maybe it's a bulging disc. I'm trying to, you know, I'm doing my doctoring. And she's just, as the day goes on, she gets worse. And so I said, well, it's a Sunday. Let's just do this. Let's just get you to sleep. Try to get a night's rest. If tomorrow morning it looks like this, we'll go to the doctor. So Monday morning, we wake up and she's worse. And she's just can barely walk. And it's mostly like her left side. And so I said, what do you want to do? And she goes, well, I want to go to the chiropractor first. And I was like, okay, all right. So we have a chiropractor. And this guy was really terrific. We tell the story. And he says, first thing he says is, when you fell, did you hit your head? She goes, no, I didn't hit my head. And he talks a little bit longer. And he goes, did you hit your head? She goes, I didn't hear it. So he goes, do this. So right hand, boom, right on the button. Left hand, wow, she misses like by 4 inches. Says, close your eyes and hold both hands out equal. And she does that and the left hand just... And so he goes, so he hasn't done anything to her. He's just done that. And he goes, you go to ER right now, with a real somberness in his voice. And so Monday morning, we go to ER. It's an ER experience. You know, you got to check in. Monday morning is better than Saturday nights with, you know, whatever, drunks and knife fights. So but still taken all day. And they do a CAT scan or something, not quite sure. So then they finally move up in the head. Doctor says, when you fell, did you hit your head? She's like, no, I didn't hit my head. So they finally do this CAT scan. It's like 4 o'clock Monday afternoon. Now we've been all day there, just everybody's trying to figure stuff out. And the doctor walks in. We get this news with no inkling at all. And he says, you have a brain tumor. And he says, about the size of an egg. And he goes, it's high on your right side. And he said, it's pressing against all the things that are left side motor skills. And so later, what we were able to think through was, you know, everybody thought she fell and had a head injury. No, it was the tumor that created the fall. Her left foot didn't do what it was supposed to do. So they keep her overnight Monday night at the hospital. And Tuesday morning, a neurosurgeon walks in. They do a bunch of other... First, they think that the tumor has generated out of some other cancer that's got to be somewhere in her body. It's metastasized, right? And so the whole body, that Monday, rest of the Monday, CAT scans, check, but it's not anywhere. So neurosurgeon comes in Tuesday and he goes, and then she's worse. Now her walking is getting worse. Her left arm's not working. And he says, we have to do this pretty quickly. He goes, you're welcome to get second opinions, but he goes, you can't walk. It's moving rapidly now. And he says, I have a cancellation. I can do this Thursday morning. So she falls on a Thursday. We're diagnosed on a Monday. We go home on Tuesday and tell our kids and our loved ones, Tammy has a brain tumor. Surgery on Thursday. And you just have all the... Life just changes in that moment. It's a pivot. You think you're going this way, and then you're not. You're going a new direction. And, you know, for us, just our faith in the Lord is what carries us in that day. And we just are reminded a man can think he directs his steps, but God orders your path. And Tammy's got this incredible faith. And she just says, this is the journey that God has for me. So we make the phone calls. They actually let us go home a day, which is, I was like, really? We can go home? They're like, yeah, you can go home. You got to come back. So on Thursday morning, she can't walk. Now she's, The whole walking has just gotten worse. She literally can't walk. I call my son Josh. We firemen carry her to the car, get her to the hospital. They get her in. So it's just, I can really tell it's getting worse and worse. And there's so many parts of this journey that I'm just even, you know how journeys are. You know your journey. If you told somebody all the details, it'd be like John when he's talking about the scriptures. Well, there's not enough paper to write everything that Jesus did. Well, there's these things that God's doing all along the way as we begin to share this with people and people begin to pray and there's just the collision of faith and reality. And so all along the way, there's just all this part that God's doing. And so Thursday she has a surgery and it's supposed to be 4 hours or something. It's like six or seven. So everybody who's watching the time capsule, who's been on this journey, they know those days. You know, they're long days. The hospital chairs get really, butt gets sore. The day gets tiring. And you're prayerful. You're doing that day. And eventually the surgeon comes out and he says the cancer is a glioblastoma. And he says it's terminal. It's not anything we can fix. We took out as much as we could. The glioblastoma is different. And I always thought of a tumor as like a ball, or, you know, people say size of an egg or a golf ball. You hear that kind of thing a lot. Glioblastoma is different. Glioblastoma is like spaghetti. And so it lays it like in the brain. It just lays in there. Well, let's say this is the good part of your brain and this is the cancer. He can only cut. So far, he's cutting good stuff. One neurosurgeon told me, because the brain's a really funny thing, he goes, there's parts of your brain I can take out. Nobody'd ever know. He goes, there's other parts of your brain. You cut one eyelash too far, you never walk again. You never talk again. It's just this complex thing that God's created that modern science still doesn't know. And so he says, we took as much as we can. He says, you know, of course, my kids are there with me. They're like, well, how long does she have? And he goes, you know, I would say 11 months tops. So there's kind of three mile markers when our lives change. The day she fell, we kind of marked that one. Monday's when we found out she had brain tumor. Thursday, we find out she's got 11 months to live. So right away, in terms of treatment, so they tell us, so we're not doing anything to heal you. You're going to die, but we're going to try to extend your life. And it's a really surreal conversation. Every cancer survivor, everybody's been in these conversations. So the doctor, who is the, you know, he just represents modern medicine and modern science. He says to you, we can't do anything for you. And then they say, and these treatments that we're going to do, they don't really seem to work. And then they say, but we're going to do them anyway. And you're like, why would we do that? So Tammy and I had long conversations, you know, would she be the one in a 10 million, the one in 100 million? Would it work? Is this... So we prayed and thought about it, and we're like, well, the first two parts of the journey were just some experimental chemo and radiation. And we're like, okay, let's just do that. And so this is starts in November of 2013, so 7 years ago now. So she's got to get home after the surgery. The doctor says, okay, now here's the deal. So she goes up to ICU on that Thursday when she has the very first surgery. She goes to ICU. She goes, she'll be in ICU a week, 10 days, then to a regular room. And then he goes, she has to learn to walk again. He goes, part of what I cut out is the memory patterns, the how the brain channels the information on how to walk. He goes, we have to teach her to walk again. He goes, typically like 30 days. Some people never really get it. So all this information on a Thursday. So we kind of are praying just in our family. We're like, boy, it'd really be great if Tammy be home for Thanksgiving. you know, it's going to be our last Thanksgiving on earth before heaven. Family's going to be around. I think that'd be really great. So for that to happen, though, she got to be home in like 10 days. So it's not really a reality, but we're praying for it. We're hoping for it. So she's in ICU. First couple of days are really rough. And then the rehab therapist comes and they go, okay, we're going to see how you can walk. And she's literally like, okay, you got to lift the foot, point the toe, plant the heel. She's teaching her to walk. So I'm watching her and Tammy's just this stubborn, determined woman. You know how you have your good traits and your bad traits are the same traits. So when it's good, it's determined. And then when she aggravates me, it's stubborn. So all of that now comes into play and she just wills herself to walk. And so 7 days later, we're in ICU. The doctor goes, I think you can go home. And of course, me, I'm just accustomed to always being right, type of personality. I'm like, you mean you think she can go to a regular hospital room? Because we're in ICU. He goes, no, you can go home. I said, how many people go home from ICU? He goes, no one. No one goes home from ICU. He goes, you can go home. She gets up and she walks. I mean, of course, they put you in a wheelchair, but we take her home for Thanksgiving. And we start this journey. And this, again, you know, everybody who's part of their cancer journey or part of their trip, you have this journey where you're asking God, what have you got for me? You're praying for healing. Those of us who have a confidence in eternal life are like praying for healing, but like the Apostle Paul, to live as Christ, to die as gain. And Tammy's got that. It's just glowing from her, just oozing from her. And so we start that journey. And so she's got 8 weeks after the surgery before she can start radiation and chemo. And we do that. And we get to March of 2014. So what is it? Been 4 months, maybe five. And all along, we're doing CAT scans. And, you get to this place. And again, a lot of the folks that are watching this, they understand this. You go into like in our case, Big Sky Imaging or something. You know everybody by name. They all know you by name because you come every week. Come every week for your chemo or twice a week. Or you come every week for your radiation or however often you do that. And, you know, like, hey, Bob. Hey, Paul. Hey, Tammy. You know, you all of a sudden you've got this new community of that. And in Tammy's case, she embraced this new community. And she not only embraced them, but she just had this burning in her soul that this was her chance to talk about her faith. And so Tammy and I in terms of the relationship, I'm the pastor, I'm the preacher, right? So most of the time, I'm the talker, she's the prayer partner. But everything switched. She became the one who shared, I became the prayer partner. And every doctor, every nurse, every technician who came in, she'd start talking about when she gave her life to Christ. And then she had this phrase, and I can remember every time she used it, I can remember the power. I'd be watching people, I'd watch their face, and she'd say, you know, I gave my life to Christ. And she said, I meant it. So I gave my life away. She said, he can do with me whatever he wants. And I'd watch people try to comprehend that or try to hear that. And you know, if a guy says that at the gas station to another guy pumping gas, like, yeah, I saw this weirdo at the gas station. But when you're there getting your chemo, when you're there for your radiation, that person, all of it, it's got a completely different meaning when you're talking to another cancer patient who is uncertain of eternity. They listen to that and they're like, what is she talking about? And so she just had this the power of that moment because she's got terminal cancer. Well, we do all that. We come to another CAT scan. It's March and, the tumor's grown back to everything it was and more. So in the meantime, another layer of the story. Our neurosurgeon left town, and a neurosurgeon moved into town, who joins Emmanuel Baptist Church. He's a part of our church, and they were partners in the same thing. And he'd been keeping up with our case. He had actually assisted in the first, and he's now our good friend. We know him as a brother in Christ. He's this really talented neurosurgeon, and so nothing changes for us. Our care actually gets better. Now it's spiritual and physical, and we're connected to a brother in Christ. And so he says, let's do another surgery. And that surgery was really good. The results of it were really good. He was able to get more of it. And from that surgery, Tammy had her longest period of kind of what I would just call normality. She could walk. She struggled with walking. We had to be careful she didn't trip or fall or stumble, but she could walk. She never once had problems talking. She was a bookkeeper by trade. When she had the brain tumor, first thing that happened was everybody was like, we better go back and look at all those books, right? She never had a mistake in any of them. She still didn't have any counting mistakes. She's clear as a bell. God gave her this she was lucid in every sense and not in a lot of pain. And so, man, she just doubled down on living her faith. And that meant she had more time to talk to people and share them. So now word in her life, and this happens with lots of cancer folks, everybody will connect with this. So it has this ripple effect. You kind of let your, it's your immediate family, it's your extended family. In our case, it's our faith family, Emmanuel. And then word starts to get out to people she went to high school with, and old friends. And it's trickling down because she's young. She's 49. And yeah, when you're a 49-year-old and you find out that another 49-year-old's terminal cancer, you're like, wow. It's because now it's not in the paper. It's not somebody you're just reading, but somebody you know. And then so what happens with her on every case, she's like, and she, also I should add this part. She wasn't a believer in high school. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of a carousing girl. And so now she's got these people that knew her in high school and they didn't know her as a believer. And she came to know the Lord after her two kids were born. And so all of a sudden, she gets this whole new set of opportunities to share faith. Man, she takes every one. And God moved in so many occasions and people were strengthened in faith. It's a wonderful moment when she talks to somebody in high school. They weren't a believer. She wasn't a believer. And we find out they both became believers. And so now they've got this commonality. So we're doing that. And it's really a precious time for us. Well, we get past 11 months. And we're like, okay, this is good. And so me, in my human reasoning, I'm like, man, that last surgery was really good. So I'm like, so maybe what we can do is every time this tumor grows, we can just have a surgery. I mean, the chemo didn't work and the radiation didn't work, but the surgery was good. So I'm like, we can just have a surgery. And so, I'm starting to have like a little hope in that. And the same time we're going through that stuff, I know you know about this, Don. Every good, well-meaning friend brings you this article that he got offline about, if you take vitamin D or E, you know, if you quit taking, in our case was like, cut all your sugars because cancer will feed off of sugars, but not off of, so we're doing all that. That girl who had a big sweet tooth, like she cut all sugars out for a while. We're just doing everything that might work for us, but it gets bad again. And now we're at that 15, 16 month place, but I'm thinking we'll just have another surgery. And we go to our good friend, our neurosurgeon, and he does all the work and we're looking at the stuff and he goes, I can't go in there. He goes, the reward, it's not as much as the risk. And he said, I've cut all I can cut. And the tumor, so Tammy had two really wonderful blessings. One is that the tumor was high and it was right. And, it's one of those deals where they say, if you're going to get glioblastoma, that's the place to get it. So that's why she lasted longer than the 11 months. but it grew deep, and then it crossed over. So you got this hemisphere in your brain. The brain's an incredible thing. You can almost lose one hemisphere and function with one hemisphere. But when both become damaged, then things started to change for her. And once again, she started to lose all the left side motor skills. And so that's part of my journey. I've been talking about Tammy the whole time. All these years as pastor, I go to visit folks who had cancer, and I'm looking at husband and or wife, and I didn't realize what the caretaker was going through. And so now when I go to visit, I make sure that I am praying for and ministering to both people, because they're parallel journeys. They're slightly different. One's got the cancer and one doesn't. But the caretaker, you know, that's just work. And one hospice nurse told me, she said, however long you're a caretaker for, it'll take you that long after the death or the conclusion, it'll take you that long to kind of get back to normal. So it's a journey in and of itself.
Did you find that true for yourself?
Yeah, I did. I was getting that fatigue. And of course, in my case, and so I'm standing up in front of folks preaching every Sunday, and I get to those places where verses I quoted for years, I couldn't quite grab it. And I was just living at that high fatigue level. I could sit down like this, and if I just wasn't engaged talking to you, I could just go to sleep on a moment's notice. Because she'd wake me up about 4 or 5 times a night, go to the bathroom, something she would need. So I'd get up out of bed, take her to the bathroom. It was about a 30 to 40 minute thing, out of bed, with her, walk her, holding her to the bathroom, bringing her back. Well, then I'd get back in bed, but it'd take me 20, 30 minutes to fall asleep. 30, 40 minutes later, she'd wake me up. So I was exhausted. And I didn't really know it much until later. Your adrenaline carries you, your love. My love for Tammy carried me. But yes, it did prove true for me. And it was about that long before I kind of started feeling that. Plus, you have the grief of that afterward, which those kinds of things.
Well, as a caretaker, if we could stop there for a second. Yeah. What were things that were helpful for you? Of course, I'm thinking of my wife now. I'm going, sure. You know, I always, people will ask, I'm like, oh, she's great. She's doing, you know, and then I'm like, well, I can tell you what I think, but I really don't know how much she's caring and how. So what are the things that were helpful for you during that as a caretaker from your church family, from your immediate family?
Once again, it starts with your walk with the Lord. You know, just the confidence of knowing that Tammy and I belong to the Lord. That's the great confidence. And then we had this incredible support network. Not just our family, or so many of our family are believers, but then our faith family, and that carried me as well. I gained weight during that time because so many people in church were bringing us food, and I started just like putting food in the freezer and saving it for later, and my freezer was getting fuller. And sometimes I'd just take it to my neighbor. I'd wait for sweet people to leave, you know, and then I'd go to my neighbors and I'd go, I can't eat this, and it's beautiful food. Take it and eat it. So we're sharing it. So we were carried by all of that love and care. But I would say this. This is what happens with the caretaker. You're trying to cowboy up because you don't want, you know, I don't want you to see my doubt, my confusion, my uncertainty. I'm trying to, I'm there with you. I'm there for you. We're gonna do this. And so you cowboy up in my case, for Tammy, and then I'm carrying my uncertainties privately. So that's something where you gotta make sure you can do that together. And there are times when you can do that. There are times when Tammy and I had really honest talks about how long this life looks, and she's going to be seeing the Lord face to face real soon.
What were some of the uncertainties that you were keeping that you didn't?
I think for me, Tammy held longer than me that she would be healed. And I felt like I'd heard a word from the Lord earlier that she wouldn't. but I didn't feel I had a right to take that away from her because I wasn't positive. And so, so she would talk about when she was healed, she'd talk about next year when we would go do this. And I'd be like, I didn't want to steal that from her, but I was afraid my eyes would give me away. Like, I don't know if we're going to get there. Yeah. I don't know that we're going to see Christmas with the kids. I don't know that we're going to have that. And then, you know, just uncertainties in terms of, I'll tell you one of mine. You know, again, we're talking with people who are making this journey, so it's a good time to be transparent. Let me be really honest about this. Tammy was a better pastor's wife than I ever was a pastor. So here's one of my fears. I was like, the Lord's going to take Tammy and everybody's going to find out I'm not really a great pastor. She was just a great pastor's wife. I actually had a time where I was like, I should resign before everybody finds out. Well, of course, it was just doubt and fear. It wasn't reality, but it was enough reality that in my mind, fatigued with some emotion, mm-hmm. it was a temptation like, you should just quit. And by the way, everybody would be okay with that because they'd know what you've been through. You know, listen how that dialogue mm-hmm. starts in your head. So that was some of the uncertainty. Some of the uncertainty for me, and you and I have talked about the age of your kids. My kids were adults, but I was still like, God, you know that Tammy's the better parent. You should take me and leave her. And how am I gonna parent these kids? So that was some of my uncertainty. So depending on the day, depending on the fatigue, depending on how the evil one wanted to attack or tempt, kind of floated through some of that. And I think with every passing month, and I know some who are going to listen to this, that their journey is every passing year. Our whole journey was literally 24 months, almost to the day. But I know some. I've got a sweet lady in my church. She was a caretaker for almost 50 years. For a young girl born with difficulties. Well, you know, remember the little formula? However long you're a caretaker, it'll take you that long to overcome it. Well, she's not going to live to be 100. How do you overcome that? That's become a part of who she is. And I do think with caretakers, we take that identity on. And that's why sometimes when you lose someone you love, the grief is so hard because you just lost your whole focus. And it is your proper focus during that season. When Tammy was sick, I was able to keep her at home the whole time. Wonderful blessing. Wonderful blessing. So every now and then I had to run chores or I was still trying to preach. So I'd get somebody to come Sunday morning and sit with her. And so, you know, if it was you, Don, I'd say, I got like three. I got to go to Albertsons. I got to pick up the dry clean. I got to, you know, get the oil change. I'll try to be back like in an hour and a half. And I would speed all over town, like running as fast as I could, get my groceries, get my whatever I had to do, get back as quick as I could. It was just became part of who I was. And the Lord took Tammy, and like a week later, I got in the car. And man, I've got my foot on the pedal, and I'm doing as fast as I can. And then all of a sudden, I realize I don't have to hurry. In fact, there's no one for me to go home to.
In moments like that, what kind of emotions do you go through? You know, what kind of feelings?
It's tremendous emotion. I started this time capsule dialogue by saying we were so connected. So there wasn't even a single part of my life that didn't have a Tammy imprint on it. And so there are strong emotions, and the loss is real. It's not, you know, the idea somebody just goes like, hey, all things work together for good to those who love Jesus. God bless you, brother. This is deeper than that. This is a real loss. You trust God. You believe God. But, man, you hurt. And sometimes in that hurt, I remember a conversation I had with my daughter. She was asking me about, well, what was God's plan here? What's God doing? And at that particular time, I said, honey, I literally only know two things right now. I said, I know that God is good, And I know he doesn't make mistakes. That's all I know. And that would just carry me through that day. So I cried myself to sleep, like lots of people. I cried myself awake. I struggled a little bit with purpose because I had lost my purpose. My purpose was to care for Tammy, and I lost that. So I kind of, once again, realigned myself with what God would have for me. So those are all real. And again, for those listening, our faith in Christ carries us, but it doesn't shield us. God says, I'll walk with you through the fire. I will go with you through the valley of the shadow of death. He doesn't say, hey, if you give your life to me, you'll never know the valley of the shadow of death. That's not his promise. And it's kind of a trick where a lot of people go like, well, you know, I had a good friend one time. He was dying of cancer. He didn't know the Lord. And he read a book by Billy Graham. He called me and said, I read this book. He said, is this true? I said, yeah. And he said, I want to give my life to the Lord. And I prayed with him, and he asked the Lord to come into his life. 2 weeks later, he called me. He said, could you come see me? I said, yeah, sure. I went to see him, and then he said, you remember when you were here 2 weeks ago and I prayed? And I said, yeah, of course. And he goes, well, he said, I was just trying to cut a deal with God. He said, I didn't really mean it. What I meant was, I'll give you my life, you heal me. Hmm. And I was devastated. And then he said, today I want to give my life to the Lord. I always reflect on that. Because he had to come to that place where he had to realize, you give your life to the Lord. And then, like Tammy would always say, he gets to do with you whatever he wants.
That's right.
And to his own son, the cross.
That's right.
To us, the son says, take up your cross and follow me. And so you do that journey. You know, you have to believe. We sometimes we read the Bible like Sunday school stories without emotion. The Apostle Paul is beheaded. Peter is crucified upside down. The church didn't just rejoice on those days and go, man, those guys are in heaven. Everything's great. That's good. Of course, there was that joy because they know where they are. But imagine being in the church and losing the Apostle Paul. You got to look around and go like, whoa, how are we going to replace that? And Timothy's a pretty good guy, but I don't think he's no Apostle Paul. That goes with real life.
Yeah.
And so that was my journey. I'm doing that. And so that's what happened. She just got worse and worse. And then we had so many blessings. We only had about a month or 6 weeks of hospice. And on the night the Lord took her, we'd started playing praise music in the room that she was in. And I know she's close, so the kids are there with me. And the hospice nurse comes, and she's really struggling breathing. And my daughter says, how long do you think she's going to last? And the nurse says, well, here's the thing, she's young. So she got brain tumor, but the body's healthy. He goes, she can last a long time. And at that stage, we were praying that the Lord would take her. And so from the time that nurse said that, an hour later, she was in heaven. And right as the Lord calls her home, good Father is the song that ushers her into heaven. And actually, for a long time, I was like, oh, Jesus, that was so wonderful. Thank you for playing that song for Tammy. And then I realized later, I was like, well, it was for me. It was for me to know he was a good father. And so we just had so many of these blessings.
Can you take me into those moments when you start to pray for your spouse for the moment is... they take them home?
Yeah, so I think for many of us on this journey, there's this time when everything switches. Up to this time, you pray for healing. Maybe you pray for more good days. Maybe you just pray for more life. But eventually, and Tammy are... her inabilities to communicate, to connect, she's not coming back. She's this incredible testimony and faith she had. Well, now she's in a hospital bed, and it's in my room, but in a hospital bed. And so there's a place there then where one day you switch, and your prayer is, you realize, Lord, the most merciful, sweetest thing you could do is take her home. Heaven awaits her. It's beautiful. There's no glioblastoma there. And you begin to switch that over, and he comes full of emotion and full of tears, and you still have all those doubts I told you about, because the Lord's taking her but not me, and why? You still have whys, and so you're just full of emotion. It doesn't take anything in that season to make me cry. I mean, like, it's the hokiest Hallmark movie ever. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, I'm crying. And, you know, and it seems like everybody you meet, they tell you this, some story. And I'm just, my tears are just, like, they're just right there at the thing. Everything just kind of knocks me over the edge, because you're kind of raw. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, this is your look. You're looking at death at the same time. Some of the greatest times I had with the Lord were the Lord starting to tell me, do you really believe all the stuff about heaven you've preached all these years? Do you really believe there's an eternity, there's a heaven? Because if you really do, then there's nothing to hold on to here. And so truly with great sincerity, I was praying, I do believe that, Lord, and so I want you to take Tammy. How glorious it would be for her to get to be in your presence. And I think it changed me forever. I know it changed the way I live. I think it changed the way I preach. I look forward to heaven. Changed the way I officiate funerals. Changed the way I visit folks that are going through therapy or radiation or chemo. Because I do believe in a heaven. And this life wasn't meant to be eternal. And we talk, in this world, we talk funny sometimes. Like if someone dies early, like, he was so young, she was so young. But what's really, in eternity, what's the difference between 100 years and 80 years, or 80 years and 60 years, or 60 years and 40 years? Because this life is so short. And that's what the scripture says. Life's like a vapor. Appears for a little time and it vanishes away. And so you begin to realize there's not much here. So to put any stock in this life, to put any stock in gold or money or possessions, or any stock in reputation, or any stock in my trophies, or then you begin to realize, oh, that is so empty, because there is eternity. And then when you realize what God did for us, and, you know, I love the passage where Jesus comes to the tomb of Lazarus, and he's talking to Martha, and he says, whoever believes in me will never die. And then he says to her, do you believe that? Well, Lazarus is in the tomb. She's like, can you imagine doing those, that work? You're like, and she says, I believe you're the Messiah. It's like, I believe. I don't have it worked out. And I think that's what happens to the caretaker. You don't have it worked out. You know, you don't have all the answers. But you know this presence of Christ. And she said, I believe you're the Messiah. And that's what Christ says to us. And so now I think to myself, I even try to talk this way. I try not to talk about Tammy in the past tense. She's not gone. She's alive. She's not here. But she's alive. Because if you believe in me, you will never die. And so that's everlasting life. And so that's part of my journey, brother.
There's so much you touched on that really hit me, because it's easy for me to be on this journey because it's just a different seat. And
yeah, two different seats right here.
And I sort of feel the kind of the weight, you know, that Cassidy has.
Yeah.
What kind of conversations would you have wanted, or did you have it during that time with Tammy that was helpful? because I think of my situation going, well, is there ways to have conversations that I should, that I don't know that she wants?
I know. And you have to find the right time for those. I mean, some of them are basic. Some of them are what anybody would tell you. You should have conversations about money, lots of conversations about the kids. And I think even more so for you guys, because your kids are younger than ours. There were things that she would tell me to do. She was the one in our family who paid all the bills, wrote all the checks and stuff. Mm. So she made me do it in front of her so she could know that I knew how to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So some of that's really pragmatic stuff. Up until that time, I didn't do any of the cooking. All of a sudden, I'm starting to do some of that. Of course, I had all those freezer meals, you know. But so those are like pragmatic conversations. Yeah. But we had lots of spiritual conversations about heaven and life and the purpose of life and why one lives to be 100 and the other dies much earlier, and what God's doing in the world and what that witness would be. And I don't know this for a fact, but her witness in those last 2 years was so powerful. I think she touched lives that she would have never touched if she just died of old age at 100. So we began to see that. We gloried in that. Those were celebrations for us when someone would say, hey, well, you know, I've given my life to Christ. Or, well, you know, your faith has changed me. And we celebrated all of those. We just kind of talked about everything. We always did. So it wasn't a change for us.
Yeah.
We just there were times, and I mostly let her determine that, you know, when she was ready to talk about those things. So I just kind of would follow with that.
Yeah.
In that, but we talked about everything.
So, you know, we homeschool and we work from home and have done that for so long that our, you know, we spend, you know, all day, every day,
yeah,
pretty much. It's rare that we're not together.
You guys are like us, enmeshed together.
Yeah. So sometimes there's things that I just think that we're continually in conversation about. So sometimes you get that to-do list, you hear somebody and you're like, oh, maybe I need to do this, this, and this. And, you know, the biggest thing we've been prepared for this for a long time as far as just the journey that we've been on. And,
yeah,
and so, you know, I guess I just boil it down to the only thing that really matters is, you know, I've never worried about Cassidy because I just, you know, she know her faith is so strong, and I just trust that God, you know, he doesn't need me,
you know,
and he will do what he wants, you know.
He can care for her
and
meet all of her needs, and that's kind of hard. I think that's hard for us both with our spouse, our kids, because you don't want to really say my kids don't need me. They need Jesus.
Yep.
God uses you. What's our job as fathers and mothers anyway? It's to grow our children to the place where they can hear the Heavenly Father's voice and they can follow Him. That's we're stewards of them. They're not ours.
Yeah.
And so you work through those things. The great thing about being together all day, every day, is these conversations can be a little more organic. They're harder when we sit down and go like, okay, Don, I have three things I need to tell you. That's sterile, yeah, and punches you in the nose. So it's better for them to flow and be created organically, and then you can find yourself in those moments. And that's what we did. We just, and like I said, we always talked about everything anyway. So she wanted to make sure I was taken care of, kids were taken care of. She had people in her life she was still praying for, you know, that I promised her, man, I will share my faith with them. I will share your love for them after you're gone. I think maybe the hardest thing of all was she still felt like she had things to do. And I've given that a lot of thought because I think if we're alive, if you wake up today, God has something for you to do today. And it doesn't matter if you can't do what you used to could do, you know, or that you're not going to the job, you're going to chemo instead. There's something that God wants you to do today. And so I love that sense of purpose that she had right to the end. It's like she'd wake up and like, she'd have a list of folks I want to call, I got to connect with, this is what I want to reach out. never really lost purpose until the very end when she was literally like unconscious, but she had purpose every single day. And so her purpose carried me too. She carried me a lot. She was the stronger of the two of us for sure.
So when did she pass? It was 2015?
November 2015.
So for you, how does your life move on from that point? How do you continue in ministry? How do you look forward? What's, you know, in those moments, what's next for you? Is it?
So you think, because this is the human experience. You lose your spouse. We've been married 21 years, and you're like, and your whole life has been caretaking up to that. You know, the last for me, those 2 years. So like in my brain, I'm like, man, I really need to get back. The church just gave me all the time I needed to care for her. Church was so sweet. Church grew during that time. That's not your normal church growth model. I'm like, so I'm like, I got to get kind of back in the saddle of that. But I'm struggling. I'm still struggling with those uncertainties that we talked about earlier. Like, oh, how do I pastor without Tammy at my side? How are we going to do this? Where are we going to go? And so I'm easing back in. I'm still caring for my kids emotionally. You know, I think it's hard to lose a parent sometimes. It's a different experience, so I'm caring for them. And I would say that I was doing really well for about the first 3 or 4, maybe even 5 months, because I kind of got back in the saddle. So I had lots to do. I had people to thank. This story that I just shared with you, I was sharing this story like almost every day with somebody. You know, and somebody see you at Walmart and they just haven't seen you in a while. They say, how's your wife? They don't even know she's passed. You're like, she's in heaven. You're sharing the story. You're trying to move through that. But after about 4 months, I kind of hit a dark spot. I was like, what's my purpose here? How do I go forward? And so I just turned to the Lord, and I was just crying out to him. And some of it was still the same things I told you, like, you know, God, I know you're perfect, but from my point of view, you really should have taken me, left Tammy. That would have been better. I don't know what I'm doing. So God started to do this work in me, and I was shocked by it originally. It was kind of it's what I call a holy discontentment. It's not a discontentment because I don't have toys and things and trucks and a house. It's a mansion. It's I want more of God. I know I've been to the edge with Tammy. Tammy got to cross over. I just got to look. So kind of a holy discontentment in me. And so here's part of my journey, Don, that's very unique to me. So Tammy passed right before Thanksgiving 2015. On Christmas Day, my dad hands me a Christmas card from this family that were lifelong friends with our family. So when my family came to Montana, and you talked about how long that's been, we had some friends that they were actually in my dad's church in South Dakota, and then we moved to Texas, and they moved to Texas across the street from us. When I was growing up, my grandparents were not believers on either side. So these were the people that if my mom and dad passed away, they were the people who were going to care for us because they were believers. And so they had three boys. Those three boys, three of my best friends. If you have three boys and you want to play any sport at all, you have to have a fourth boy to make it even, 2-2. I was the fourth boy. And so this family, I grew up at their house. I spent night with them. Their parents were good. Their parents and my parents were best friends. And so we've kept up with this family the whole time. My dad hands me a Christmas card, kind of like he would do once a year. It's that Christmas letter that every family gets where you catch up. Well, this year I opened the Christmas card, and Greg, the middle son, who's just 2 years older than me, his obituary falls out. Now, I've been Now, this is the other thing that happens to caretakers. So I only have one thing to do in life, and that's care for Tammy. So you lose track of people and stuff, and you know you don't have time to write your Christmas card during that time. You're just you just got one thing to do all day every day, and it's consuming. So I've lost track with these guys, and I didn't even know he was sick. So I read the obituary, and he died of thyroid cancer 3 months before Tammy did. And this guy was really, really influential in the formation of my faith as a boy. So he's like 2 years older than me, Don. So he's the point guard on the varsity basketball team. He's setting school records for points scored. He's the homecoming king. And he never wavers in his faith. High school. He doesn't go out and get drunk with the kids. He's not partying. He's not sleeping around. He's living for Christ. 2 years older than me. So you know what I decide? Well, if Greg can do that, I can do that. I can live for Christ. So by the time we get to college, we go two different ways. I haven't talked to Greg in 40 years, and now he's in heaven. And I'm like, I should have told him. I should have told him that part of who I am today, he had a real part of that. And I thought, well, I can't tell him. He already knows. He's in heaven. He knows. But I could tell Patrice, his wife, because she's a part of that same youth group in that church. And just a little older than me. And so I kept the card till late January. And I thought, oh, I felt impressed. So I wrote her a thing and I said, you and Greg were part of the formation of my faith. I'm sorry to hear that Greg has passed. I know a little bit about the grief. I lost my wife. I write her that. She emails me back, says thank you. She'll pray for me. And that's kind of where the story should normally end. When I hit that dark time, I thought, Patrice knows about this. You know, she lost her husband 3 months before me, so I had the email address, so I emailed her again and said, how are you doing? I'm kind of struggling. And she doesn't write back for like, I don't know, like 4 weeks. So I'm like, she's busy. I'm a guy who's so far out of her past, you know. And then she writes me back and she goes, I'm not doing very well. And so I write her and I said, I'll pray for you and you pray for me. And we started dialogue in May. And it's just on email. That's all it is. We never called. We didn't talk. Just emails. And we started dialogue in May. And God just takes it. And he starts to heal us. We have a similar grief. We have this parallel track. The family that she married into is the family of the best friends of my folks. And so we start going through this thing. And then by the middle of the summer, and the Lord just says to me, hey, do you see what I'm doing here? And I'm like, no, I don't think you're doing this. And he goes, oh, yeah, I am. And then I'm like, no, Lord, I'm a pastor, right? So how many times have I had like a widow or a widower? And I'm like, don't do anything for a year. Don't sell your house. Don't go to Paris. Don't marry the guy next door. I've given that advice so many times. And then I'm like, no, Lord, this isn't the right thing. And then he says to me, who's in charge of your life? Are you in charge of your life or am I in charge of your life? I'm like, well, you're in charge of my life. And I'm about to say, but. And he goes, that's right. I'm in charge of your life. And so the conversation moves. And I said, this is what God's telling you. This is what I think he's telling me. And she's like, yeah, he's already told me. And I'm like, oh.
So he asked for you.
Yeah, he did. He did. He literally put us together. And we were married on New Year's Eve 2016. And that's part of my story afterwards that I know is very unique to me. Not everybody has that part of the story, but
I think it's very important because, you know, that what happens next for so many people, you know, brings great hope.
Yeah, or fear. In front of it, we're afraid. We're like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. But I hope people hear this, because God's still in charge of your life. He's still got you. He still has a plan for you. There's great hope for you. And Patrice and I, we joke about this all the time, but we are way better husband and wife now because of what God did in my life with Tammy, what God did in her life with Greg. We don't fight about what's for dinner. We don't fight about who gets to watch something on TV. Those things are petty. Those things are earthly. They mean nothing to us. We've already been over and looked over the Jordan into the Promised Land. We've both got loved ones there. So all of a sudden, we start marriage not here, like so many newlyweds when they're young. We start here with this great faith and great journey. And we have so much of this journey that we can talk about. And so it's just one of the great things, one of the thousands of great things that God's done for me.
Yeah, that's an interesting, for me, of course, with kids and then with my wife, you know, that there's that, you sense or hear the part of, you know, if something happens to you, then that's it. And, you know, and I expect, I mean, we got a couple months before transplant and you know, there's chances that's, you know, that yeah. I'll come back from Seattle and there's, you know, but I really, so you think about those things and you know, and I just would know that God would bring somebody or could bring someone. And I just trust in her that she would know.
He loves your kids. And I don't know how God's going to do it, but I know he's going to care for them.
Yep.
And ultimately he cares for them better than we can. Right.
Yep, absolutely.
So it comes back to, we trust that.
Absolutely.
And have no idea what that looks like. Every person's journey is quite different.
Yep.
But for those of us who are believers, we come to that place where we can say, but God's met all my needs according to Christ Jesus.
Yep.
So.
Well, she follows the Lord, so I just have no doubt that no matter what path, if that were to be for her, that she would go, which, you know, God would provide and she would know. So there's a solace for me to go, you know, I know that she would be okay because of those things. I know after hearing about the struggles of going through that, you know, that hits pretty deep.
Yeah.
Because easy for me if it doesn't go, you know, the way we want it to. But yeah, there's great hope in hearing your story, and it's been a blessing to me, and you have been a blessing to our family.
Yeah.
And you know, it's been a great joy to have my kids growing up, you know, in Church in Emmanuel.
And it's an honor for me to have the Corcorans. That's a blessing.
Man, I thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing your journey, and it's a very blessed life. And I think you know, recognize that you can have a blessed life and have hardships within it. And I'm something to me. You mentioned it. I think when calamity and crisis or death comes, that's when, you know, a believer is truly, you know, introduced to his faith. You know, what do you believe? What do you hold? What do you know is true? And so that's why this has been an easy path for me,
mm-hmm.
is because, you know, because of my foundation of faith is, you know, I'm unafraid. I'm, you know, my life is not my own. God, do with me what you will. And so thank you for sharing that journey. Thank you for coming on the Time Machine. I appreciate that. And, I think this would be a good place to land the plane.
Amen.